Welcome to the Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubow. And have you ever wondered what it takes to retire at age 27 through real estate, acquiring a staggering 93 rental units? Well, today, my guest, James Gleason from St. Louis, has not only cracked the code, but also has an unconventional approach to real estate investing, navigating different seasons as an investor, from leveraging debt aggressively to paying off $400,000 in real estate. James has a fascinating journey to share. Stay tuned as we uncover the secrets behind his success. James, welcome to the show. Great to have you here.
Bryce, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, if you're watching on video, the tree is up. James got his tree up and we're ready to dive in. So there's a lot to unpack in your story here, but let's start with retiring at 27. We were talking a little bit before the show about you exiting your W-2. How does it feel? How did you get there?
Yeah, great question, Bryce. Really, it's everything that I thought it would be. You know, I've had this master plan for the past 6 years that, you know, real estate was always going to be my way out. I started out when I was 21 in college. I had pursued basketball my entire life, you know, with the end goal to make it to the NBA one day. And playing Division II basketball was sobering, you know, seeing all the other players that were there who were bigger than me, stronger than me, and better than me, ultimately, you know. So that was sobering, and kind of left basketball at that point and needed a new sport, you know, needed something else to pursue. And real estate sort of naturally presented it as that for me. I saw an ad on Instagram, you know, started doing research on Bigger Pockets, and really just started obsessing over real estate, you know, reading 2 to 3 books a week, constantly listening to podcasts, networking, you know, asking questions, to the point that I was able to purchase my first property when I was 21. And then I really just caught the bug from there. You know, there was no turning back after that. I purchased my first property for $25,000 6 years ago, if you could believe that. I'm here in the St. Louis market, and today that property is worth about $150,000. So, pretty incredible the power of real estate over time. But I put about, you know, $25,000 into that property. It appraised for just under $100,000. I was able to pay back my hard money lender. And really just did the Burr method, you know, for my first 5 or 6 properties. You know, from there, got a little bit more sophisticated, started using things like creative finance, started doing partnerships, some hybrid approaches where there was a little bit of creative finance, a little bit of partnerships. Fast forward 6 years, today I'm at 93 units, with the intention to hold on to those really forever. You know, sometimes I'll do a strategic refinance if I have a lot of equity in the property and I feel like that equity could be used better. And then for other properties, instead of refinancing, you know, I'm working on paying those properties off just because I've gotten to a season now where I've worked this hard and I don't want to lose everything that I've worked for. So I'm taking a balanced approach of refinancing some, paying off others. And fast forward 6 years later, Bryce, retired through real estate literally about a month ago, and just have the passive income coming in. And it's been a fantastic journey.
Well, it's interesting. I was watching a presentation at a local real estate event, and they were talking about equity. And he said something interesting. He said, you can't eat, you know, when you retire, you can't eat your windows and your doors. So, you know, unlock that equity. Roll it into something else. You know, don't just let it sit idle because, like you said, it can be utilized in a lot of cases to keep building that portfolio, especially, you know, the first properties you bought and now they're starting to come out. And you're like, okay, well, market's gone up. It's been paid down. What can I do with the spread? 93 units, what is that comprised of? Is it all singles? Is there doubles? Is there multis in there?
Totally. So to your first point, you know, a lot of investors look at return on investment But I think a lot of investors ignore return on equity. So when you're looking at your portfolio as a whole, you can say, okay, I have $100,000 in equity on this property and my rents are, $1,200. Well, if you extracted that equity, what could $100,000 in equity do for you? And is that equity producing the highest return that it possibly can? Well, in that example, if you have $100,000 worth of equity and you're only yielding $1,200, well, what if you refinance that $100,000? You got $80,000 out of it. And let's say that you purchase a $400,000 asset with that equity. Well, now your rents are, $4,000 a month or $3,500 a month. So, I'm really obsessed with extracting the most amount of value from my portfolio as possible. While simultaneously, kind of playing the safe route with, paying off properties at the same time that I really know that I want to own forever. And just really building that nest egg, so that I never ultimately lose it. But yeah, Bryce, to answer your question, it's mostly single family, but I also have a 17 unit in there. I have a 28 unit in there. There are a few duplexes. There's one quadplex. And then there's roughly, I don't know, 20 to 30 single family homes, roughly.
So
So,
tell the people at home that are listening, what did you find to be the big difference between acquiring a single versus some of those larger multis or even the largest one? What was the biggest eye-opening thing, or what did you have to navigate to really get yourself ready to take on an acquisition like that?
yeah. So I actually have a unique stance on this. I actually like single families a lot. I think a lot of people transition to multifamily because that's just the next best step. It's more scalable. But strictly from a return perspective, I think single family homes have the best return on investment out of any sector in real estate. Your tenants stay there longer, they have more pride of ownership. They pay for all the utilities, they cut their own grass. They see it as a home that they're going to live in for 10 plus years rather than just an apartment that they're going to live in for, just season a couple of years and then move out. So I actually really like the single family home space. It's just not easily scalable. And I really like how in multifamily, I can purchase one property. My 28 unit here in Soulard, we purchase it for 2.85 million. And it appraised as is for 4.2 million. So right there, that's what, $1.5 million in equity almost. And I can't do that in single family,
No, not in one move.
So, right, exactly. So the numbers are just a lot bigger. It's a lot more exciting. When we're done with that property, it's probably going to be worth well over $5 million. So being able to have more control in the value of the asset and raising the income, lowering the expenses. We're adding a dog park. So as we get tenants with dogs, we could charge pet rent. That's good for the overall NOI. So there's pros and cons to both. I think the natural step for me was to go the multifamily route. Because I've just created so much more wealth in multifamily. It's a lot more scalable. But I think there's nothing wrong with purchasing singles, in the interim, in between properties, because the returns for single families can be pretty staggering as well. So for anyone listening, I would say pay attention who you're taking advice from. It's really easy to get on Instagram and listen to Grant Cardone and immediately want to get into multifamily for your first deal. I think it's a really good idea to take baby steps, build your credibility, get some traction, learn from your mistakes, and then slowly but surely get into multifamily along the way.
So with a portfolio like that, who's doing the management? Yourself, your team, or did you hire it out?
Yeah, it's interesting. I have been in this business for 6 years. I've had a property manager for 5.5 years of that. And it wasn't until I started talking to a lot of colleagues, a lot of fellow real estate investors in this business, some who owned less than I did, but were making more money than me. And This might be the single most controversial topic in all of real estate is should you have a property manager or should you self-manage? And the school of thought that I had and that so many people have is, it's kind of what's that book? The E-Myth. It's like if you own a coffee shop and you're in there day to day and you're doing all the work, well, you don't own the business. You're working in the business, right? But I actually think with real estate, it's a little bit different. So with property management, right? When you're running your numbers, most people, when they're underwriting a property manager, they'll just put 10% for the gross rents, right? Because that's what they charge. But I found that you actually lose a lot more than 10% in hiring property managers. They have their leasing fee, which is typically first month's rent. They have their, maintenance fees, which is typically 10% on top of the maintenance expense. So if the maintenance expense was $100, they'll charge you $110. There is also with maintenance, if there's a toilet that's clogged, I could go to Home Depot for $15 and install a toilet kit and fix the issue. Well, for them, since it's not necessarily their money, it might be easier to just replace the toilet for $100 and kind of be done with it, And then there's the what I call I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on this podcast, but the give a shit factor, which is, they just don't care as much as I do. When I have a vacancy, it's an emergency. I need to fill it up within a week or less, or 2 weeks or less. I'm losing money. Whereas a property manager might have, 500 or 600 units that they need to manage. And it's not that they don't care, they just don't care as much. And the typical turnaround for a property manager, in my experience, by the time they get in there, do their make ready, get the professional photographer, and then actually list it for rent, you're looking at like 2 to 3 months, in my experience, over the past 5 years until they actually get to it. So outsourcing is important. I'm not going to my properties with a hammer and a nail. I have my own team that does my maintenance. For leasing, I have a really, really great system. I could get more granular with that if you'd like, but I have a really great system for leasing my units, that works really well. And I'm just making significantly more money, and I'm spending maybe 5 hours a week on self-management for 93 units. So I'm self-managing, and I've just found over the past 6 months in collaborating with other investors who self-manage, this is by far the best route for me. And I think if you must have a management company, especially if you want to go bigger, vertically integrating a management company is the best route to go.
Well, tell people a little bit about the leasing, because as a, one of the biggest things that nips people in that and makes them want to quit is placing the wrong person. You place the wrong tenant and it might cost you more than a month of rent. They might stick in there. They might be hard to get rid of. They might immediately stop paying and it might, cost you $10,000 when had you waited an extra month and lost maybe a thousand in your rent or whatever it would be, you get someone better. So how are you able to collapse that time frame and avoid those pitfalls of the self-managed rental portfolio?
Yeah, so that's a great point, Bryce. There's a lot of times where investors, including myself, I've made this mistake where a unit, back when I had a property manager, this unit's taken, 1 to 2 months to rent. Well, let's just let anyone in the unit because, I'm losing so much money. Well, you end up losing significantly more by rushing it and just allowing anyone in your property than to just continue being strict and eventually getting that good tenant who's potentially going to stay there for several years. I keep it pretty simple. I don't do any showings for my properties in that I'm physically there. I do all self showings, and I require that the prospects send me, a picture of their ID and their last two pay stubs so that I can verify who they are, number one, in case they break anything. And by the way, in doing this, I've never had any vandalism. I've never had any issues with this. So for the people out there listening to this who have hesitations, I did too. It's worked really well for me. I think getting that ID and the pay stubs is critical. One, because the people who don't care, they're just not going to respond. They're just not going to send you that information. So it's kind of another hurdle. And two, you can pre-qualify them. You can look at their pay stubs, and if they don't qualify, you don't have to waste your time with them, right? But then sending you their ID and their pay stubs, typically they don't mess around with your property, right? They're being serious. They want to actually take a look. And I list it, on all the platforms, Zillow. I use a lot of Facebook Marketplace. I've gotten a lot of success there. I use Zumper, I use Realtor, I use Trulia. So I use all the sites. I think a distinguishing thing that I do though is Facebook Marketplace. Not everyone does that. I think it's critical for my leasing success. Definitely go through a lot more garbage. A lot of people say, "Is this available?" And you say yes, and then kind of never
That's
hear from
it.
them again.
You see the video reels all over, people making fun of that, like buying and selling on Marketplace. But I feel like Marketplace is a connection to real people. You know, there's real people on Marketplace looking for places to rent, and it's very easy. They're already probably on Facebook and they're just like Marketplace, or they're in conversation, or maybe like the house that they're living in, they hit their head going into the low basement again. They're like, I'm enough of this place. And they immediately just click the button Marketplace, 3-bedroom, and now they're looking for a place. So it's like a very quick conduit. And the other thing I like about Marketplace is typically when they're messaging you, it's their profile. You click on their little picture. You can see, oh, look,
Exactly.
there's just piles of them drinking, and like, oh, here's one of them punching a hole in the door. Like, nope. So you can
Or with a
almost like
gun.
dig. Yeah. You can
Yeah.
dig a little bit, you know, through the profile because you're getting more information right from the get-go. It might be a little bit more hassle, but, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. Now, when we're talking about a real estate, you know, Robert Kiyosaki calls this the unfair advantage. When it comes to real estate, what do you think your secret sauce is? What comes easy to you that other people might find difficult to do?
Honestly, I think finding deals and finding money has been my strong suit, which really fundamentally is what your job as a real estate investor is, right? I mean, everything else is kind of fluff. The money-making activities in real estate is finding deals, finding money, and refining your systems, right? So from the beginning, for whatever reason, I've always enjoyed looking for deals, right? It's always kind of been a treasure hunt for me. So I've always enjoyed that aspect. And then raising money, it started out with friends and family, and then, that sort of grew from friends of friends, and then, people who found me on social media. And then, just networking with other investors in the business and, hard money lenders and private money lenders. So just sort of collaborating with a lot of investors and really taking the networking aspect extremely seriously, that's been critical for my deal finding and for my money finding. I would say probably, 50% of my deals have come from networking, and probably 50% of my money has come from networking, right?
And so, what are
So,
some networking activities that you would suggest people do when they're looking for deals and money?
yeah, great question. So in finding deals, you want to build relationships with, number one, wholesalers. I mean, it's their job to find you deals. And I'm willing to pay the five or ten or $20,000 for a good deal if I can leverage other people's time. And with that, just to kind of make the point, with wholesalers, I build good relationships with wholesalers, and they want to continue bringing me deals, because I don't nickel and dime them. So if they bring me a good deal and they're going to make $100,000 on that asset, I don't care. That's great. Job well done. Keep your $100,000. I'm not going to negotiate with you just because you're making a lot of money. If the deal pencils out for me, I'm not even going to negotiate with you. Find me another one. Good job. Let's keep doing business together. So, networking with wholesalers is critical. And you can find wholesalers at your local real estate meetups, your Facebook groups.
Hand it
There's
signs, call the sign as you're driving down the street.
you got it. You got it. 100%. Yeah. So you can find wholesalers if you want to find wholesalers. That's not really hard. Investor-friendly agents is another one. I would say real estate agents who understand the investment side of the business, those have been absolutely critical in my business. Being able to take a deal to a real estate agent who's going to, find the deal for me, negotiate it for me, basically do everything for me. And I just have to basically hire him and be on his team, and he really takes everything from there. Which really, goes to the point of your team is really everything in this business, all the way from construction to your wholesalers to your agents. So real estate or investor-friendly agents has been critical. And then on the multifamily side, obviously it's brokers. The more brokers that I can build relationships with. And it's the same mentality with the brokers as it is with the wholesalers. They make money when they sell deals. So I want their lives to be as easy as humanly possible when they're working with me. I want them to continue bringing me deals. So really, Bryce, it's just about putting yourself out there, setting up the coffee date or the lunch date, meeting people face to face, showing them that you're serious and being genuine about it, not just telling them that you're serious, but when they send you a deal, get back to them, or close on it if you get it under contract, right? So that's been critical for me. And then in the raising money aspect, I would say marketing myself has been more important than just about anything. Posting on social media when I'm finding deals and people reaching out to me. I like to take a fishing approach rather than a hunting approach, right? I don't want to pitch someone on my real estate deal. I want to organically post content. I want to organically tell people what I'm doing. And eventually people will reach out. People will be interested. And when people are reaching out to you, it's a much different conversation than when you're, constantly going at people and saying, "Hey, will you give me $100,000 for this deal? I promise it's a good deal. Here's your return." People actually kind of shy away from that. People are like, "Why does he want me to
Well,
do this deal with him so badly?"
it's like the guy and the girl at the dance, right? If you're pitching people, you're the guy and you're gonna have to make a bunch of pitches to find a girl to dance with. But if you're marketing yourself, you're looking good on social media. You've proved your value. Now you're gonna have money coming to you, and you get to kind of select the suitor and say, "Well, I don't really like your terms. I don't really think we'd be a good partnership. Thanks for the offer of your money, but I'm gonna have to pass." And so it really does flip the dynamic. And the other thing I've found in the strategy that you're talking about, and maybe you can comment on that, is when people come to you, you definitely get to dictate the terms of the interest rate and how the deal is gonna go, as opposed to you having to like satisfy the person that you're walking up to, as opposed to them coming to you. So, have you experienced any of that with people coming to you with money where you get more power in the actual negotiation?
I would say the dynamic of the conversation is definitely different, right? You're not having to sell them on the deal. They are interested in doing the deal. That's why they reached out to you. As far as, having more leverage in the conversation, to me, if someone's super greedy, I don't want to work with them anyways, right? But I've always had a very selfless approach with my investors because I want them to continue investing with me. Right. It's the same thing with wholesalers. This is a long-term game. I started when I was 21. I'm 27 now. I plan on doing this till I'm 90, right? I freaking love this business. This is my new sport, right? This is my new basketball. So,
Guns on them.
yeah. So I want to build relationships with investors, and I don't necessarily want to have all the equity and then they get a small interest rate because they're going to find someone else who gives them better terms and they're not going to want to work with me anymore. So I want their experience to be so good with me. I give them all the cash flow, all the tax benefits. There's no funny business going on. We're in this together, 50-50 or whatever the terms are for that relationship. They make a ton of money, and then they come to me 6 months later or a year later and they say, "That was awesome. Let's do this again." So my approach has always been very long term. And it's not selfless because I'm a good Samaritan. It's selfless because I know I'm going to make more money in the long term by making my investors happy.
Good relationships. Now, when people get to this point, especially when they're instead of retire, I like to use the word gainfully unemployed. When they're gainfully unemployed, looking back at when you got started, is there anything you would do differently if you had to start it all again?
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, I certainly would have educated myself more in construction. I would say if there's any area that I've lost the most money in this business, it's construction. You know, a contractor could have charged me $50,000 to paint one room and I would have paid him because I just didn't know. I didn't know anything, right? The saying ignorance is bliss is somewhat true, but in real estate, ignorance is expensive, right? If you don't know any better, you're probably going to lose money as a result of that. But you know what, Bryce? I don't have any regrets because I think that that ignorance is kind of what took me so far. Just saying, you know, oh, I can take on, you know, 10 projects at a time and have
Yeah,
no
why
idea what
not?
I'm doing and just kind of figure it out as I go. You know, that's what got me this far, and that's what's ultimately propelled me to retire and become financially free. So, you know, I think every entrepreneur says, if I knew back then what I know now, I'd be way more successful. And that's absolutely true. But, you know, I think the ignorance was good. I think the ready, shoot, aim approach has been really fruitful for me. And you know, I think there's seasons as an investor. You know, the first season for me was over leverage, you know, be more aggressive, take on more risk. But now that I've built, you know, an $11 million portfolio, and a multi-million dollar net worth, I don't want to lose that. I've worked so hard these past 6 years that if I lost all of that, I mean, that would be horrific, right? I don't know that I could live with that. So I've worked this hard. So now season one was be really aggressive. Season two is don't lose everything. So be more conservative, start paying off mortgages, you know, be a lot more picky with deals. You know, I'm not really buying in C class areas anymore. I'm buying in B class and nicer now. So, but that approach starting out wouldn't have served me as well. You know, I think buying C class properties in the beginning is great because that's where you get your cash flow, and cash flow is a lot more important in the beginning. Right now, I care more about appreciation because I've replaced my job and then some. So right now, really, the long-term wealth is more important than the cash flow at this point. But depending what season of your journey in investing you're in, your approach should be different. So kind of long-winded answer, but yeah, you know, there's a lot of things I would have done differently. I would have learned more about construction, but I certainly don't regret any of it.
Awesome. Well, we could probably go for another hour with all the knowledge and experience you have, but I think the best way would be for people to touch base with you directly. So if they want to reach out, they want to find out more about you, connect with you, what should they do?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Bryce. So you guys can find me at James Gleason Real Estate on Instagram. Feel free to shoot me a DM. I've gotten into the mentorship business as of 3 months ago. So I have mentees now that I'm mentoring one-on-one on a weekly basis, to help them get from 0 to 10 units in their first year. And I feel like that's very, very possible. I did it in my first year without a mentor. So I think if someone's holding your hand through the process, I can show you what to do, what not to do, the mistakes that I made, and get you there a lot faster. So if that's of interest to anyone, feel free to reach out to me on Instagram, DM me. That's the best way to find me. Or on
Awesome,
Facebook,
awesome.
James Gleason.
There you go. So I really appreciate your time, James, and I'm sure that was a little master class for people on how to get retired by 27. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thanks, Bryce. I really appreciate it.
All right, guys, and until next time, we'll catch you on the next episode.